baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Yeah, we're rolling.
I think it's been 5 weeks since I have been in this room right here with my photos on the wall, in my nice comfy desk chair with my up and down desk. Look at this, right? Oh, so fancy.
Oh, look at this, the auto
raise. Wi-Fi that works. Oh, it's so great to be off the road, dude. I am just like, oh my goodness. I flew in yesterday from Ottawa, and man, sometimes people on flights are the most infuriating thing you can possibly deal with. Like the people who just get on an airplane and are like, great, I'm basically in my living room. Let's fucking kick my shoes off and my sweaty feet while they sit right next to you. And like the lady who is next to me too, who is in the middle, no offense, right? A little bit bigger lady, but she also had to sit like this with her arms out. Like, man, I bet you her arm was like freaking 4 to 5 inches into my seat the whole time. And I'm like, and I'm trying to be, what's the word, assertive and like bumping her as much as I can, but she doesn't care. She's just sitting there. And on top of it, dude, she was so hot and sweaty. So like, I could just feel like this heat emanating from her for 4 hours while I'm just trying to like...
Word for word, it was the exact same thing for me at the Lumineers concert. I had this lady all over me, up in my bubble, like...
Yeah.
Ugh, but I mean, hey, that's marriage, right? So...
All right. Did she take her sweaty feet out of her shoes too?
She did not. No, she, other than that, she kept her potato mashers in place, but otherwise it was
that was the thing that got me. That was the thing where I was just like it hit me like a slap in the face, just like oh, and you're just like in it while her feet dry.
Anyways,
it's good to be back.
Man, that was good. It's good to have you back.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the walk-off. It is mailbag, an afternoon mailbag. It's been so long since I've...
You haven't even done this in a long time. Here we go.
Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon. There it is.
There we go.
We do have some really good questions. Our interaction was down a little bit this week because we had the trade deadline last Tuesday where we ran... a live stream for 8 hours. Big shout out to you. Great job there on your part. A huge tip of the hat and thank you to Baseball Jen, to Garth Yorgi, right? Up in Northern Ontario, who joined us for a while. We had Craig Ballard in Toronto join us. We had Joel, hey, Commie, come on the show. Man, it was pretty cool. It was a great little experience. Thank you to everyone who joined us on that. But because of that, we do have quite a few questions, but maybe a little bit less than normal. So we're going to really be able to delve into these questions. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. You can feel free to DM either Adam or I on our platforms. Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast. I know we have listeners do that quite often. A few of our questions for today was that way. You can join the Discord, always free, link in the show note. Big shout out to our Patreon. A big thank you to you, everyone who has donated the $4 a month. Normally we read the list of names right now, but the list is getting longer and longer. So what we're going to do, we are going to show you love, Patreon, don't worry, but we're going to wait until the end of the show.
Ooh.
All right, buddy, let's get into it.
All right. First up, we ran a poll on our YouTube community tab. Is Whit Merrifield a game changer for the Blue Jays in 2022? 143 votes came in on that, which is nice to see the interaction there. 41% said yes, he is. 38% said game changer is a bit too generous. And only 21% said no. So, by and large, I would say most people are in support of the Whit Merrifield addition.
We've watched him play for or five games now?
Something like that, yeah.
How have you felt about watching him? I've actually been pleasantly surprised.
I've been impressed with it, for sure.
Okay. We'll get more into this, because I know we do have a few Whit Merrifield questions. So.
Yeah. Well, the next one comes from David Cook. He says, do you think Whit Merrifield trade was so that next year the Blue Jays can trade Teo, and have a replacement lined up already without a huge cost? We've kind of talked about Teo and his future on this. You know what? Actually, this whole mailbag is a lot of crystal ball look ahead at the future of this Blue Jays team and the shape that it's going to take. Kind of a accidental theme that we backed ourselves into. But let's start with Teo.
My short answer to this question is no. I don't think that that's kind of the thinking behind this move. I think it had a lot more to do with George Springer. It had a lot more to do with this year, 2022. It's one of the few moves they made at this deadline that actually was addressing problems and areas of need for right now. Could Teoscar be moved in the offseason? Yes, he could. In fact, we're going to get into it a little bit more. I want to wait to kind of really get into this. But, yeah, short answer is no. What do you think, bud?
I don't see Teoscar being extended. Like, I don't see a contract offer coming his way, whether or not we trade him in the offseason or partway through next season. I don't know. Like, it might just be we get the last year out of him and then we shake his hand, give him a pat on the back, and say thanks for your service, and then watch him
leave.
I think
it's likely, like, he could be moved. He could be moved in this offseason. I just don't see Whit Merrifield as the planned replacement.
Sure. That's fair. Okay. Speaking of Whit Merrifield had a play at the plate against the Minnesota Twins. And this next comment comes in from a Twins fan, actually. So Twins Lifer 4 on Twitter DM'd you and said, hey guys, I don't listen all that often because I'm a Twins fan, but I found your channel last year after the Barrios trade. I think you guys are great and tune in here and there when I want to know what's up in the AL East. But I want to know, from a Jays perspective, how the hell that was a run on Sunday. That call still has my blood boiling. If it costs us the division, then it's going to cost us the playoffs because we sure ain't getting a wild card. True. So that last part, for sure. True. We can start there. True.
AL Central, definitely a tight division currently with the Guardians, the White Sox, and the Twins all vying for that top spot. Twins Lifer 4 makes a really good point. That this is a do-or-die division to win. They're not the AL East where the Yankees are going to win it and then three other teams could still make the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. They are a good team, the Twins. I think they showed that in this series against the Blue Jays. I know a lot of Blue Jays fans were kind of impressed with the team that is on the field there in Minnesota. So let's get into that play. And I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to act like when it went down, I knew the rules or what was happening. When Whit Merrifield ran down the third baseline and slid into Gary Sanchez and it looked like it was out, I would have guessed when it was going to replay that it was 100% out. And I know the only reason I kind of understand how this went down now is because it happened and all the talk that went on afterwards and the explanations from the experts. Joe Siddle really opened my eyes when he went on Blair and Barker yesterday and was kind of talking about how as a catcher, you should be taking that ball, especially when the guy is tagging from third on the infield side of the fair line, blocking the inside half of the plate, giving up the outside lane and then being able to tag. Because they had him dead to right.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he was
Whit
out by
Merrifield
a mile.
Was out by a mile if Gary Sanchez didn't screw this up. And that's really what happened. But honestly, I want to talk a little bit about Whit Merrifield because he really impressed the hell out of me on this play. I didn't know the rules. The announcers didn't know the rule at the time, right? Gary Sanchez didn't know the rule, obviously. The slide was methodical, Adam. Like, there was actually a point during the play when you watch that replay where you can tell his thinking changed as he's barreling down that third base line. Because he could have dove out and around and tried to been acrobatic and tried to slide his hand in there, but he didn't, did he? No, what he did was he charged in even harder and slid right into his knee pad that was blocking the plate. Whit Merrifield knew this rule. And that blew my mind. That blew my mind. He slid into Gary Sanchez, got up, and was yelling for a replay instantly. And he wasn't yelling, "I touched the plate." He's yelling, "He's illegally blocking the plate.
I have no lane.
I have no lane," he's yelling. Like, man, that is some baseball smarts. Not every player has that sort of acumen. Do you think Lourdes would have done that? Like, do you think if it's Teoscar running down the third baseline that he would have known that rule? I don't think he would have.
No,
I
but
mean,
like,
that's unfair to say, but
this is like Whit Merrifield is a guy who led the AL in stolen bases 3 of the last, what, 5-6 years. Like, he's a base runner. That is his like strongest asset as a professional. So of course he knows the rule. Did you catch the John Boy breakdown of this?
I didn't.
Okay, there's a really good one they did. It's up this morning. So it's a really good breakdown. I heard the, what's that? Caleb Joseph? Is he the other one?
Yep.
So I heard his breakdown right after it happened and explaining, you know, being in the way and, you know, if the catching the ball takes you into the blocking of the plate, it's fine, but you can't set up there. And I heard it. I don't know. When I look at the rules, because here, Jean Boy's got the rule brought right up in his video. So I'm going to just bring this up here so we can see it.
Okay.
So here is the reading of the rule. This is the Buster Posey rule. This is the saving health and lengthening careers rule of not having collisions at the plate. So unless the catcher is in possession of the ball, the catcher cannot block the pathway of the runner as he is attempting to score. Pretty standard, right? But then there's the further explanation. If, in the judgment of the umpire, the catcher without possession of the ball blocks the pathway of the runner, the ump shall signal the runner safe. Okay, so a little bit more clarification there, but then it goes on to further clarify, which I think just makes it more messy of a
it's a messy play.
I think the rule is broken and needs to be fixed, because like we're lucky this happened on August 5th, not October 5th, right?
That's a great point.
But again, but like also, if you're the Twins and you end up missing the playoffs by one game, then essentially this is October 5th, like for you, right? If that's your playoffs are ended here.
Again, I understand the Twins fans' frustrations, right?
Yes. So the further explanation of this is, notwithstanding the above, it shall not be considered a violation of this rule if the catcher blocks the pathway of the runner in order to field a throw, and the umpire determines that the catcher could not have fielded the ball without blocking the pathway of the runner, and that the contact of the runner was unavoidable. So basically, he's allowed to block the plate if in fielding the throw it carries it, like before he even gets the throw he has to adjust. So this is where the John Boy breakdown is great. I'm not going to play it here because whatever, they just did great work. Go watch the video. I'll probably put a link to it in the show notes, but they do have like a very good camera angle of Gary Sanchez as the hit is made, like I'm showing it here. You can't see, Scott. But they show like Gary Sanchez has his left foot on the infield side of the plate, right? Like he's definitely set up where he should be to not block and like give access to the plate. You can see in the same camera angle, the left fielder catching the ball. And then Gary kind of like adjusts, and the timing of it is kind of weird, right? So I mean, ultimately I kind of think that this play should have been overturned, if I'm being completely honest. But I would have liked,
you think they got it right? You think they got it right?
I think the call on the field they got right. I don't think,
oh, okay, so you think this was an out?
I think this was an out. I think so. Yeah, I mean, if I'm just reading the rules as it stands, and my best interpretation of it is that Gary Sanchez set up in the proper spot. He didn't move until the ball left the outfielder's arm. It's about halfway to home before he shifts into the plane or to take away the lane and block the plate. Is that him adjusting for a ball coming in? I mean, I get like, yeah, I probably, but it's hard to tell when you're watching a real play slowed down into slow motion, right? It drives me nuts as a football fan because we always see like catches. What's a catch? Gets overturned when they're like, did he have possession of it? And now you're watching it in like 1,000 times slow-mo. And it's like, well, how long did he actually have the ball before it came out or whatever? And it's just, it's so hard to tell, but this rule is broken and needs to be fixed is my ultimate conclusion here. This needs to be clarified. You need like black and white definitions of this. Either you can block the plate or you can't, and we got to get the ambiguity out of the rule. That's my opinion.
Think about how muddy this rule is. Think about how fast the game is going down. And then think about the fact that Whit Merrifield in 0.2 of a second was like, I know this rule. Let's see what we can do. Like, literally, he was like, I'm out. Let's slide into Gary as hard as I can and claim that I don't have a lane. Pretty impressive, man.
That I mean, look, it's good heads up, for sure. Like, absolutely.
Whether the rule is shitty, whether it should have been safe or out is debatable till the end of time. But the fact that Whit Merrifield put New York and the umpiring crew in the situation to need to make this call, it's truly impressive to me, man.
No, it is. It's good heads up. I mean, it's those finer points of the rule book. It's like when you're in a rundown and you know, the hot box is going back and forth. And then you turn around and you realize that there's like a defender in the base path who doesn't have the ball. And like, you just run into that guy and you're safe. You don't even have to get to the base. You just have to make an effort to get to the base, clip him, and you're automatically safe, right? It's like, oh, okay, freebie here. Yeah, interference. Yeah. It's just like, it's a good heads up by Merrifield to go for it. Like,
yes,
it's a rule exploit. It's a... Yeah, tip of the hat to Whit Merrifield. I mean, we stole a win. That rule needs to be clarified or like
it sure does.
Fixed.
It sure does. Absolutely, it does. However, again, I just don't think that Vladdy chugging down third base would have done the same thing. They all will now.
I don't know. Oh, man, like on the one hand, like player safety is a real thing that should be prioritized. Mm-hmm. I think
but we are both old enough to remember catchers just being
blown
loud.
Up. Oh yeah. I think that there should be I don't know how you would write this rule, but the rule should be a catcher is allowed to block the plate and you're allowed to blow them up. If they're not blocking the plate, you're not allowed to blow them up.
Right.
If they are, you can blow them up. And then that's a decision the catcher can make. Like if he wants to take one for the team and get fucking wrecked to make the out at home, amazing. If not,
yeah, but you know, cool. All that's going to do is inspire the coaching staff and everyone to teach catchers to just be blowing up again. you almost have to take sure. that out of their hands.
I know, and that's and that's the point of this rule, right? Is because yeah, Buster Posey yeah. is such a fucking hero. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's I don't know. It's okay, tough, well, man.
So basically, to Twins life for four, this probably cleared absolutely nothing up for you.
It's as clear as the rule is.
Like, literally, as a baseball fan, my heart goes out to you, and I would probably be on your side in any other scenario if this wasn't against the Jays, but we needed that win, buddies. Sorry. I'm going to take it.
There you go. All right. I like it. Well, I'm able to accept that we stole a win because it's too late to overturn, so...
That's right.
All right. Good question, though. Appreciate it. On to the next. So Blue Jays Thunder on Twitter DM'd us and said, "Hey, guys, I think it's pretty obvious now what a failure the trade deadline was. We only have one starting pitcher, Manoah, that we can trust. This is not a playoff team. Kikuchi sucks. Barrios sucks. Shatkin sucks and should be fired."
Okay. So... there's a lot to unpack with this yeah. one. Number one, I do want to say this is not a isolated
opinion.
Emotion, yes. Yeah. This, and I love the passion because we are, as Jays fans, very frustrated with the last week and a half. Let's go week. Since the sure. trade deadline for multiple reasons. Okay, there were holes in this lineup that everybody saw. They were addressed, but maybe not to the extent that some of us felt they should have been. I mean, Adam and I talked about this on Friday on the podcast. Am I impressed with what the Jays did? The years of control, the potential for some of these guys that they picked up? Yes. Did I want more? Absolutely. And I think that's a pretty universal feeling across this Jays fandom. But so let's get into what he's saying here. First off, let's put a little bit of respect on Kevin Gausman's name, can we, please? Like, listen, I get what he's saying, and he's very frustrated. And yes, Manoah has been just incredible all year long, but Gausman has been dominant. I mean, we do not have one good pitcher. In fact, I would say there is even an argument to be made that Gausman has been as good, if not maybe even slightly better than Manoah. I love Manoah, and I still go with Manoah in game one of any playoff series, but I would listen to an argument about Gausman being the guy. Kevin Gausman just won AL Player of the Week. He went 14 innings pitched, 15 Ks, zero earned runs. He's pitched 118 innings to date. He has an ERA of 2.93. He has a whip of 1.23. Even more astonishing is that if you start digging into the peripheral analytics, so FIP, right, which just a reminder, FIP is the adjusted stat for ERA, which removes defense and the stadium. So his FIP is 1.98, which says that as good as Gausman's ERA is right now, he's been unlucky. He gives lengths. He gives length every time out. He gets big strikeouts when he needs it. That splitter is absolutely deadly. He is earning his salary, and I get the frustration. But Manoah is not the only solid pitcher in this lineup. Ross Stripling has been injured, but he has been a godsend. He has been incredible this year. Even Barrios. Like, the Barrios sucks rhetoric is based more in frustration, in my opinion, than actual reality. Like, Barrios has had some really rough outings. That first one of the year where he got one out and allowed seven runs and had an ERA of 99 to start the season. Like, yeah, that's a tough way to start. And hell yeah, especially on the road, he's been blowing up a little bit, but he's been shockingly good at home. He was one of the most consistent pitchers in baseball up until this year, and now he's been incredibly inconsistent. He's got some things to figure out, but he does not deserve to be lumped into the same category as Kikuchi. I've got some stats here, even just to like kind of go off, because you say Kikuchi and Jose Berríos are having incredibly different seasons. There is very little similarities here. Like, look at Berríos. He has 11 quality starts. Jays are 16-6 on days he's pitched. Kikuchi, on the other hand, has had 3 quality starts. And the Jays are 6-13 on days he pitches. And what do you do? This is why I'm frustrated with this deadline that happened last week. Is that with Stripling injured, you gotta strut Kikuchi out there. What are you gonna do? Call on Casey Lawrence? Like, go on the waiver wire and pick up somebody off the scrap heap? Like, there's a lot of frustration here, but this is a little bit of bad luck on top of it. By the way, I am not making excuses for this front office. In fact, the opposite. I truly believe that they should have done more at this deadline. I think what happened, and I could be completely wrong on this, but I'm kind of getting the feeling right now that this front office looked at this lineup, looked at the prices out there, thought maybe we need a major shakeup, and to try and get these pieces that we need and to shake this lineup up with 55 games left in the season isn't the way to do this. So let's roll out the guys that we've got right now. Let's not change the chemistry. Let's not take anybody off the roster. Let's add on the peripherals and see what happens. So I'm not saying they're punting on 2022, but it definitely was not let's see if we can win this thing.
Okay. Now...
Thank you for letting me rant.
I appreciate it, and now I thank you for the floor. First of all, I know ERA isn't a perfect stat. Jose Berríos has a worse ERA than Yusei Kikuchi. ERA over 5.
Yep, they both have almost identical ERAs, actually.
Yeah, it's like 5.13, 5.19. Very, very similar. Jose Berríos... look, we've said this isn't a quote by us, but we say it a lot. It's like, in baseball, as a starting pitcher, you have 10 really good outings, 10 really bad outings, and then it's what do you do with the 10 in the middle, right? And that's the difference between how long your career is, whatever.
And Berríos, those 10 in the middle has really
well, what I'm getting at here is we almost need some sort of an advanced metric to eliminate the bad outings, right? And have an ERA or a WHIP or whatever adjusted for, like, other than when he sucks, how good is he, right? Like, I'm being dead serious here because, like, I play a lot of fantasy football. Whether you lose 12 games close or you lose 2 games and you're blown up, but then the other 10 you win, that's still 10 wins. Like, I'll take the... Do you know what I mean? Like, when Berríos is out there and he's fucking ugly for 2 1/3 innings and he's given up 7 runs and he's pulled and his ERA goes sky high... Right. If he does that 10 times this year, but the other 20 times he's like pitching 6-7 innings and like very service, like there's just, I feel like needs to be some advanced stat where you're like, you're looking at a guy that's like Kikuchi is just kind of always bad. Right. Whereas like Berríos is like, I would say more often than not, pretty good. Mm-hmm. But when he's bad, he's really bad. Does this make sense?
It is a little disconcerting how bad he's been on the road and how good he's been at home. It almost doesn't make sense.
Sure, but that's a whole other point. I don't want to get into home and road splits because that is a real issue that we can spend a whole hour on.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is here. Like,
I love what you're saying. I don't know what the right answer is, too. I know that I feel like this team would be better off had they gone out and got a depth starter. I truly believe that they didn't get enough in the bullpen help.
Of course.
I'm well aware that there's prospect capital attached to this. I'm not saying let's go out and give up Moreno and Tiedemann and Martinez. That is not what I'm pushing for here. I just feel like you look at what the Twins did getting Jorge Lopez. You look at, you know, the acquisition costs for Fulmer. You know, like some of these guys that didn't cost an arm and a leg sure would have looked good in this Blue Jays bullpen. I mean,
yeah.
Let's talk the bullpen for 1 second here, Adam.
Okay.
Because it has been tough to watch, and I mean, number one, knock on all the wood, Tim Mayza looked like he was probably going to be out for the season with a bad taco after dislocating his right arm, and it does look like he's going to be back before the end of the season. It looks like he should start rehabbing shortly and that he'll probably be back in a Blue Jays uniform with this team early September and hopefully kind of finds his stride by mid-September so that when they go into the playoffs, they've got their best lefty reliever. Yeah. But that's also very frustrating to watch their best lefty reliever go down and them have zero options. Right? Like, you could go to Matt Gage. That's fine. Friend of the show. Love Matty Gage.
Mm-hmm.
He's performed very well. But he's also a 29-year-old seasoned journeyman who made his major league debut this year. You can go to Taylor Cicedo. He's rehabbing currently. He's getting close to returning. Same sort of idea, though, right?
Like, Cicedo, pitched really well last year. It looked ugly, I would say, at the start of this season. Like, did not come out and inspire confidence that he was going to be a repeat of last year. So I don't know what we're going to get out of Taylor Cicedo.
It's a roll of the dice for all of our lefties.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're rolling out a bullpen with zero left-handed relievers, and that's fine. Listen, guys like Adam Simber have a really good split against lefties and righties. So, you know, like, there are right-handed relievers in this pen that face left-handed,
sure,
that do well against left-handed hitting. But it sure would have been nice to bolster it a little bit. I mean, and then you look at the swing and miss guys. We don't really have anybody outside of Jordan Romano. We watched Romano go two innings for the first time in, what, 3 years, I think it was, against the Twins there? Because they had no other options.
Yeah, blown save followed by a win. I mean, once he was in the game, it is kind of like, there's no one left. This is it.
Yeah. I mean, Nate Pearson's throwing again. Julian Merriweather's in the Florida State League rehabbing. But if history has taught us anything, it's that putting any hopes and dreams into Julian Merriweather and Nate Pearson, you're just asking for disappointment. The boys can't stay healthy.
They can't. It's frustrating. I mean, this is exactly why we were frustrated at the deadline, but maybe this is something that is like they're playing the long game as much as that's frustrating. Like,
I think you're right. I think that's exactly what they're doing. This front office is just too darn methodical for this to be a screw up.
I guess here's if I'm going to just come to the defense of Shapiro Atkins, it's this. If we are going to just place our faith in the math of it all, and this podcast is becoming increasingly a math-based podcast, maybe the math equation was, look, we can spend right now, we can go all in, and we're still only going to have, you know, this big of a chance to win this year, and then the next 2 years are significantly worse off. Or, you know, we hate using that. Well, I kind of love using the term, we punt on this season.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next 2 years, we have a significantly higher chance of winning it all, right? Like, I mean, I would take two World Series in 2023 and 2024 over an ALCS this year. And but I mean,
sure,
those are my options.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Hey, this is me spinning things hard. Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to be an optimist. I realize that's not how things actually play out.
I just look at what they did at this offseason and I get a sort of feeling like, or sorry, this trade deadline. And I do get a feeling like this offseason could be really wild to watch what happens. There could be some major shakeups through this lineup. It kind of reminds me of 91 when the Jays traded Fred McGriff and Tony Fernandez for Roberto Alomar and Joe Carter. Like, we could see a mega chemistry shakeup within this clubhouse. And maybe that was what this was about. Maybe this front office was like, listen, boys, we're going to let you guys take the ball and run with it with this team. We'll bolster you on the peripheral. We'll do everything we can to give you the guys you need. But we're not going to move any of you, which we could have. I don't know.
All right. Well, that rolls us into our next question. So this comes in
before we move on from that last question. Okay. I do want to just address one more time. This is a playoff team. I mean, we can be as upset about that loss to Baltimore last night in a Kikuchi start as we want. But, you know, we can be as upset and call it a huge failure to take two of four against the Minnesota Twins, the number one team in the AL Central. I don't view it that way. You know, this is still a very good team. There's still a lot of baseball left.
Yeah, I mean, home field advantage is a real thing, right? So
yeah, of course it is. You know, especially in these wild card series.
Two out of four against the Twins in Minnesota, if it's played in Toronto, is probably 3-1. Right? Like, for the road team to split, I think that's a victory, right?
Love to see all those Northern Ontarians and Manitobans.
Hey, yeah, there you go.
Trek down to Minnesota, though, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, home field crowd-wise, home field sleeping in your own bed-wise.
Yeah.
Different. A little bit different.
100%.
All right, next one comes in from R. Swanson 69. So maybe this is Ron Swanson. DM'd us on Instagram and said, what are we really doing here with Alejandro Kirk? Blair and Barker figured on Monday that George has played his last game in center field. He's going to be 33 next month, and we have him for 4 more years. He'll be 37 by the end of his contract. More DH time is on the horizon for George, let's be honest. And with this pitching staff, and this pitching staff is just objectively much better with Danny behind the plate. So, where do we actually plan to get Kirk into this lineup on a regular basis if it's not catcher and it's not DH?
I mean, this is where, to go back to what we were just talking about, there could be a big shakeup coming up in the off season, and it could be around Alejandro Kirk. I mean, other thoughts there. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez both have only 1 year left on their contracts. Alejandro Kirk has a pile of value, and I know we're watching him struggle a little bit for the first time this season. Got his first hit in, 22 plate appearances, just, I think it was yesterday or the day before. I mean, he's a pretty solid trade chip, and he is a dude who you're going to probably need to DH half the time. And this R. Swanson makes a really good point about Springer aging. And I know I heard on Blair and Barker as well, the talk of him, you know,
moving to right field. Look, yeah, Springer's not going anywhere. That contract, no, not like we're going to be trading him anytime soon, right? Like,
and they shouldn't. He's going.
No. And I'm not trying to. I'm not. I just mean, like, he is very securely a piece of this team for the foreseeable future. Is Alejandro Kirk going to lose weight to a point where he is able to? I mean, I don't know, man.
A body type is a body type. Like, I don't know. Like, how much skinnier can Alejandro Kirk get? Like,
and then even if he does lose the weight, right? Like, let's just say he gets on the P90X, he's doing the Vlad system, whatever it takes, and he's lean, mean, swinging machine. If he's still not an improvement over Danny Jansen behind the plate, like Jansen, if Jansen's healthy, impacts this team beyond just what he does at the plate. And he's very competent at the plate. I mean, we've seen the power this year when he is hitting. But yeah, his impact on this pitching staff, like Kirk is no slouch behind the plate.
No, right? He's not.
But the pitching staff is better, generally speaking, with Danny Jansen calling a game. Does Danny need off days? Sure, but...
Yes. And I mean, Danny Jansen... I mean, look at him right now. I think his last 12 games, he's hitting under 200 and has one home run or something like that. Like, he's a hot and cold guy at the plate. And I don't think Danny Jansen is going to be a dude who... I think in a fully healthy season, Danny Jansen is probably a 210, a 220 hitter who's going to hit 20 bombs for us. He'll go the other way.
Yep.
He's going to be competent in that nine hole. But he calls a really good game, and there's so much to be said for that. And I know that if you look at the framing, Alejandro Kirk even frames better than Danny. But if you just look at results,
well, framing isn't going to be said. Framing isn't going to matter when there's robo umps.
Yeah,
right. So that skill is going to be eliminated soon.
Great point, Adam.
So just. Yeah, the value of Kirk if we can't get him into the lineup, and if George is going to be playing DH more next year than he did this year, more the year after, like he's only going to have to play it more and more, you know? Like for the last few years I've hysterically laughed at the New York Yankees because they have three DHs on their team playing outfield. Mm-hmm. Right? And what a terrible spot that is to be in, right? Like they need Judge and Stanton and whoever else to all be healthy. So there's so much load management, and Yankees fans can attest to it how frustrating it is to see the load management of those guys and stuff, because you got to keep them healthy and whatever. And we're gonna fucking do the same thing between Springer and Kirk.
It's true.
You know, Vladdy's gonna need time. I know Vladdy's still young and whatever, but like, Vladdy needs a day off here and there. You know, everybody needs a day off. So if you're giving George Springer three games in right field and 2.5 games at DH, and then everybody else needs a day at DH as well, it's just like, where are we getting Kirk in there, man?
And this is where, if you start to look at the big picture and where Gabriel Moreno slots in and his athleticism and his ability to maybe play a little first base, maybe play a little third base, there's just more ways. Like, if you look at the way the Toronto Blue Jays are built right now, and again, we could see some major changes come the offseason, but just look at 2022 as is. Their most versatility is within the infield. This is where they can kind of shift guys around, move guys around, massage the lineup, fit DHs in certain places, give guys rest, because they do have a very versatile infield. Mm-hmm. All four of those guys, very versatile. I'm talking, of course, Biggio, Espinal, Bichette, and Chapman. Maybe not Bichette, but you know what I'm saying, right? There is some versatility there. There's places where you can put Moreno. Maybe you can get him some time at first. Kirk isn't that guy. You're not moving Kirk around the diamond. Kirk is a catcher. Kirk is a DH. So, I mean, if you're looking at this team, and this is going to upset some people, but from a front office standpoint, Kirk is probably the guy you're moving. R. Swanson brings up a really good point, right? Like, what are we doing with Kirk? What is the plan? I don't know. We don't have a crystal ball here on the walk-off, but he seems to make the most sense as the guy to maybe be movable come the 2023 offseason.
Oh, man. Yeah, like... three-game series against the Twins in the playoffs. No, not against the Twins. Let's say we're the first wild card. Let's say we got the Mariners coming to town in Toronto, right? You've got Manoa starting game one. Kirk catches for Manoa, right? That is the duo.
Yep.
Does Kirk see game time other than in a pinch hit role in game two or three?
Yeah, because I would think you'd have to.
Well, Danny's going to catch both of the other two games, right?
Yeah.
So who's DHing? Kirk is DHing both those games?
Kirk is DHing. Hopefully Springer's healthy and you have him in the outfield every single day in the playoffs. Otherwise, why are we even load managing?
No,
like, I know he's dealing with his elbow injury right now, so that's another story. But like, my God, if you need to load manage Springer in the playoffs.
So what's our outfield, what's our lineup look like in games? Let's just say game 2 and 3 are the same, okay? Just to make things simple. Left field, Gurriel.
Yes.
Center field, Springer.
Yes.
Right field, Teoscar. Chapman at third.
Bow at short.
Okay. Espinal.
Espinal or Biggio, depending on...
On lefty-righty split. Okay. Vladdy's at first, and Kirk is DHing. Jansen's catching. Merrifield is the pinch hitter, pinch runner.
Pinch hit, pinch run.
Okay.
Maybe if there's an injury, we see Merrifield in there. He's a little bit of insurance, some depth.
Okay.
I mean, things could change. Merrifield can play second base too, right? Like, and if Merrifield's ripping the ball, like, let's say something crazy happens, like in September, he's just ripping the cover off the ball. Maybe we see Merrifield starting at second base.
Could be. All right. Well, this team could be in line for some shakeups this offseason. I think the offseason's the time to do it because then you have all spring training to work out your chemistry and your kinks and your coordination. It's too late in the year to be messing with anything on a major scale, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Last question here comes from Zero Day in Discord. It says, Bo's heading for a mediocre contract. What do you think of that? He's hitting 260 this year.
I mean,
he's a career 300 guy hitting 260 right now. There's no way he signs a contract in an off year, right? There's no incentive for him to.
Also, if I'm Bo Bichette, I'm grinding the rest of this season out and I'm reevaluating everything come the off season. I'm watching old video. I'm going over old tape. I'm trying to find the guy I was in 2021. Listen, he's 24 years old. Anyone writing Bo Bichette off is being a little bit premature here, in my opinion.
So, Barker, getting back to Blair and Barker. Not that they're wizards.
No.
But Barker figures whatever contract Bo Bichette gets doesn't start with a 2. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Do you think he's in the 100 to 199 million range? Or do you think he's a 200 plus?
If he's signing a contract right now, like, does he get the DJ LeMahieu contract? Like,
what was LeMahieu?
90 million.
5-6 years, 90 million.
Right, like Bo's a great player, but he's not a $200 million player at this point. He's got a lot to prove before we even start to talk 200 million.
Yeah, would you have guessed that though coming into this season?
No, but you know what, man? I still see a really high ceiling for Bo Bichette. I really think that 2023, one of the big difference makers in 2023 could be Bo Bichette breaks out of this freaking season-long slump that he's in and completely looks like a different player. Right? Like, if in 2023 he leads the league in hits again, I don't think that's a $200 million player, but that definitely increases his value and definitely is going to increase the demand or the need to give him a contract that, like that. I don't know.
I mean, he is a lot younger than DJ LeMahieu, right? So he's going to get more years. So that's going to bring that total number up. Just back to Alejandro Kirk here, and then we can wrap up and get out of here. Alejandro Kirk.
I want to talk Catnip's comment in Discord too, real quick.
Right, I missed that one. I'll get to that. Alejandro Kirk, since June 1st, has a batting average of .297 with a .474 slugging, an OPS of .859. Okay, so batting average .297, OPS .859. But since July 1st. Batting average. Ooh, hold on. Fucking baseball reference here. Nuts. It was giving me just June to July. I wanted July 1st on. Here we go. Okay, so from July 1st until today, batting average only .262 and an OPS of .674.
Mm-hmm. No, Alejandro Kirk is... I mean, this is what happens with 20-year-old or 23-year-old phenoms, right? They light the world on fire, and then the league adjusts. And that's what's happened. Kirk will readjust. Kirk's a good hitter.
Yeah, I just... Like, I like Kirk, too, but this is the reason that we should have... Nah, I don't even want to say should have been traded, but this was the argument for trading him, is that he's not going to be hitting .350 and doing this for the... Like, he's not... I don't think...
other general managers know that. I don't think this actually hurts his value, in my opinion.
All right. Remains to be seen. I'm still skeptical on Kirk in the long term. Yeah, I think there's got to be a team out there that would take a upside hitting catcher and be willing to part with something. But okay,
especially considering his defense isn't bad, man. He's got good framing. He throws out, I think it's like 18% of runners. You know, so that's right around league average. He's guys aren't running on him. He's a good catcher. All-star catcher.
Oh, here, you just talked about throwing runners out. This is an eye-popping stat for me. This is Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette, stolen bases last year, 25, okay? Mm-hmm. He was only caught stealing once. This year, stolen bases, 7. Caught stealing, also 7.
Wow.
I think of all the stats of Bo Bichette, that one jumped off the page to me the most.
Yeah. That makes you question how much they're sending him.
Or his confidence in himself, or what?
Something's going on with
something's up.
And I think there's more to it than just baseball. I mean, his brother coming out and the accusations of the abuse with his dad, and you know, his Dante leaving the team, and there's a lot swirling around the Bichette name right now, and I do not envy Bo Bichette. And
look, he's not. This is a team that is more aggressive than ever on the base path. Okay, we just spent 15 minutes off the talk talking about Whit Merrifield tagging up on a shallow fly to left. Like, that's aggressive, man. And Bo Bichette is running less than he did before, stealing less than he did before on a team that's more aggressive. His numbers should be going up. He's running less than he did before and with less success. That's telling me that is...
Thumbs up,
There's definitely a lot going on in his head. Okay. Catnip in Discord, this last one. Dodgers have been undefeated since acquiring Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo for MVP.
So, a few things here. Number one, most of you who have listened to the program for any amount of time knows I have zero love for Joey Gallo. I don't like his face. Not a big fan of how he constantly blames the shift. His steadfast, unwavering refusal to adjust to the shift. The deep analytic nerds who still hail him as a potential superstar. There's so much I don't like about Joey Gallo. But double that for the things I don't like about the Yankees. Love watching him slightly succeed with the Dodgers. I mean, he's not lighting the world on fire. It's a funny stat to even bring up because Joey Gallo hasn't had a lot to do with the Dodgers 6-game winning streak. I mean, the Los Angeles Dodgers are just on paper anyways, if not the best team in Major League Baseball. They are definitely, you can make a good argument that they are. But no, it's an interesting little stat. Baseball's funny.
Another funny little interesting stat here. I don't have time to pull it up. From Discord, though, I was just thinking of this. Someone shared that the New York Yankees reached a high in winning percentage around, I think it was June 19th. Don't quote me on these numbers, but they were like 43-19 after a victory against the Jays. And since then, are only two games over 500.
Yeah.
They're like 22-20 since then. So.
And I think in the last, I again, don't quote exactly, but in the last, I think it was 35 games, there's something like 15-20. Like they're wow. They're under 500. Like they are struggling right now. They're kind of going through what the Jays did in June and late May.
Big time. So, I mean, that's reason I want to bring that up is I think that's a reason to be optimistic come playoff time that like if we get hot again like we did last September, this Yankees team is not unbeatable.
They're not.
Right? So,
the Atlanta Braves proved last year no team is unbeatable.
Exactly.
Okay, we're wrapping it up here.
Let's wrap it up.
Okay, I do wish to really quickly tease everybody who's watching. Number one, thank you so much. Really appreciate the viewership. Appreciate the Walkoff community. You're all awesome. You can follow us on Twitter at Walkoff Podcast and Instagram, The Walkoff Podcast. But before we let you go, I do wish to tease. We've got a really cool guest joining us tomorrow. Jack of John Boy, Jolly Olive, for all of you YouTubers who like to follow some of the best baseball content around. Jolly Olive is one of those guys. He's up there with Foolish Baseball, in my opinion, for just the quality of his content. So we're excited about that. Feel free to join the Discord if you're not. I know we've got a tab in there right now going on upcoming guests, and you can drop questions. So if you do have questions for Jack of John Boy, feel free to join the Discord and drop them there. I think Adam even has a tab up on YouTube here where you can comment in the...
Yeah, on our community tab there, there is a post for Jolly Olives. Get your comments in there. DM us on Twitter, Instagram, wherever you want. If you know us personally, send us a text. I don't really care. Let's get those questions in. It'll be a good chat. Patreon.com/TheWalkoffPodcast. Big thank you to David, Abraham, Michael, Sarah, John, Simon, Rashid, Joshua, Jeremy, Ian, Dunedin, Bob, John, Wyatt, and now Patrick. I kind of cheated, but I did it all in one breath. A little inward singing technique that I learned from Jack Black circa 2006. We have movie reviews, Bull Durham, Mr. Baseball, Scott and I think this week we're going to try and sit down and do Battered Bastards of Baseball. If you haven't watched that yet, it's on Netflix. Very, very interesting little documentary, I suppose you'd call it.
Yeah, legit. If you're a baseball fan, there's no, I mean this, there is no way you don't love this movie.
Yeah, I would say you'll probably like it even if you're not a baseball fan. Like it's just generally entertaining, a pretty cool story and very well put together. We also have early access to all of our interviews that go up live and unedited. We have contests like for this Jose Barrios jersey behind me. We're going to give that away at the end of the month. So just shoot us a DM on Patreon. Let us know why you want the jersey and you're in to win. So there you go. We are donating 5% of all of our Patreon dollars to the Jays Care Foundation. Anything else? What's Patreon
get you? The other 95%, I do just wish to really quickly point out to all of you in the community that we are saving for a new computer so that we can do everyone, because we brought this up 2 weeks ago and we were at about 9% the way there, and we are now well over 50% of the way to this new computer. Well over might be a little bit of a stretch, but we're at
51%, so yes, but anybody who is short will attest to the fact that that half inch is very important. I'm not 5'8", I'm 5'8½", okay? Anyways, I digress. I'm not 5'8", by the way. I'm 6'5", and you'll never see me claiming otherwise. Scott, how tall are you? 7 foot? You must be 7 foot, because you're like a good half foot taller than I am.
oh, well, I'm six foot two, but if you measure me, I'm 6 foot one and a half. But I always round up. I'm a round up guy, you know.
There you go.
Or measure me with shoes on. I'm six.
I was going to say, yeah, measure me with shoes on, because, like, when am I ever not wearing shoes is a thing, right? So, yeah. All right.
Okay, well,
this went off the rails here at the end. Yeah. So,
honestly, thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Again, Jolly Olive joining us. That'll be out exclusive to all the Patreon in advance, and we'll probably release it Thursday. And then we'll see all the rest of you on Friday. Take care, everybody. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Season cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.